Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 Podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them, because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast for another early preseason episode. Today we're going to be taking a first look at the expert consensus rankings. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and I'm here as always with Mike Tagliere. Hey Mike, how was your weekend?
Oh Bobby, my weekend was full of moving stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure I woke up today and I couldn't move many of my joints. I've loosened up a little bit by the time we're recording this, but as most of you guys know, I'm in the middle of recording doing a move. So, you know, Bobby and our guest today, they worked with me on this, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to accommodate my move.
This weekend, Mike, I rediscovered my love for Fruity Pebbles. I ate nearly like a whole box in the past 60 hours, so it was a really good weekend.
That is a fantastic weekend.
Our guest today is Dan Klaskins of GetSportsInfo.com. Dan started last football season with back-to-back number one weeks out of over 130 guests. It was a phenomenal feat, and Dan can be found on Twitter at Dan Klaskins. If you want to follow me and Mike on Twitter, it's Mike Tagliere NFL or Bobby Fantasy Pro. Hey, Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, what's up, fellas? Happy to be here. And on the Fruity Pebbles note, I actually tried marshmallow Fruity Pebbles this week for the first time.
Yuck. So was it good?
Oh, my God. I wasn't thinking it was going to be, but yeah, I'm hooked. But
why would you even try something like that?
Well, when you got a five-year-old, you know, she likes Lucky Charms and just eats the marshmallows. So you're left with just the Lucky Charms cereal there. At least with the Fruity Pebbles, with the marshmallows, if she eats the marshmallows, I'm left with Fruity Pebbles. So it was a no-win,
that's a good point.
No-lose situation.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I'm not going to try it myself, but I'll take your word for it.
My cereal game is obviously not on point right now. I eat like Special K with strawberries. I feel like a grown-up now. You guys are making me feel older.
That's why you're having these joint problems with moving. Like, if you would eat Fruity Pebbles, I'm sure you wouldn't have any aches and pains right now.
I'm gonna have to give it a go. I mean, I'm in the middle of a cross-country road trip. I'm sure I'm going to have to eat a bunch of things that are not exactly the healthiest for me. And hotels, you know, they have those little boxes of cereal. I'll probably end up with, like, eating a ton of those, and I'll find some Fruity Pebbles somewhere.
There you go, man. That sounds good.
All right. So, Bobby, let's talk about some news before we get into the ECR rankings and basically where we differ and things like that. So it's been a really kind of slow news week. A few things have popped up, and one of them was Kamar Aiken signing with the Colts. Obviously, it's not a huge fantasy football impact signing, but I think it goes more sort of dynasty. And Dan, I'm curious to hear your take on this. Is by them signing Kamar Aiken, is this almost them giving up on Philip Dorsett? You know, we heard Alshon Jeffrey rumored to that the Colts had some interest in Alshon Jeffrey. Is this a slight at Dante Moncrief? What are we taking of the Colts' interest in wide receivers right now?
Well, I mean, Dorsett certainly hasn't produced, especially given his top billing there coming out of the draft a couple years ago. But I mean, I think also with, you have to be a little bit worried about Moncrief. Here's a guy that, I mean, he's missed a ton of time with injuries, really hasn't come into fruition. I think over the last two seasons, him and Andrew Luck have only played like 15 games together. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's more of a depth situation. I will say this for Aiken. I mean, during some stretches there in Baltimore, he was a guy that, especially in PPR leagues, that came into some relevance. So perhaps here with Andrew Luck, you know, he does develop a role. I don't think I'm jumping ship on Moncrief, but yeah, Philip Dorsett's a guy that I jumped ship on long ago, and I'm sure the Colts aren't far behind.
I'm right with you, Dan.
Yeah, well, I mean, when they drafted Dorsett, you kind of looked at it, and it was kind of like a clone of T.Y. Hilton, and you're like, it was a puzzling pick, to say the least. But for me, I'm wondering where Aiken fits in, because Aiken, where he succeeded the most with Baltimore was when he was playing out of the slot, and he's going to the Colts, where T.Y. Hilton is the primary slot receiver. So I'm really curious to see how it shakes out. I was hoping to buy low on Dante Moncrief, but this signing, it doesn't exactly scream confidence in the Colts' part. Do you know what I mean, Bobby?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dante Moncrief's still going to be a red zone threat, and that's really all that he seemed to be last season. There's still upside there. I mean, he is a freak athlete, but if you look at Kamar Aiken, I think this is just a Colts type of move. When you have a quarterback like Andrew Luck, like a Drew Brees or a Kurt Warner back in the day, the GM game is all about building depth. And I think that's exactly who Kamar Aiken is. He's not really going to steal a bunch of targets from anyone or red zone targets or anything like that. He's just another body that can get open. And Andrew Luck throws the ball all over the field to 8-9 receivers every single game. And I think Kamar Aiken just helps with that type of game plan. I don't think he's really fantasy relevant at all. And I don't especially think he hurts anyone else. It's just another body.
I don't think he hurts Moncrief's fantasy value, because where Moncrief comes into play mostly is his big frame inside the red zone. You look at it, 11 of his 13 touchdowns over the past two years have come inside the 11-yard line. So I don't see that role changing as much with Aiken working in the slot. If anything, I think it only helps Andrew Luck a little bit to have another weapon.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And actually, that was a good stat on Dante Moncrief. I liked it. Inside the 11-yard line, 11 of 13 touchdowns. That's an impressive stat. And Dante Moncrief, he wasn't exactly the most targeted guy. So I'm curious to see how this shakes out. I definitely believe in Andrew Luck. He's the guy I have ranked at number two right now among my quarterbacks. Ooh. But let's talk about the Browns. I mean, the Browns always seem to be in some sort of headline. You know, they're rumored to be making another run at Jimmy Garoppolo at the owners' meetings coming up here. But the one article I wanted to talk about was Josh Gordon. Apparently, the Browns are not willing to give Josh Gordon another shot. I don't really know how I feel about this. I don't know if Josh Gordon is going to be relevant in fantasy football ever again. Bobby, where are you at with Josh Gordon? I mean, are you drafting him at all in MFL 10s? Are you thinking that he's never going to play again? Where do you stand on the whole Josh Gordon issue?
I imagine that he will play at some point. I am nowhere near as high as the highest people are, so I'm not drafting him in MFL 10s, but I would draft him if he would fall to me. There's just always one crazy guy in a league of 12 who's like, Josh Gordon's going to be the greatest receiver ever, and that's just not the case. You look at what he did when he came back, and he was pretty good. I think he can be a wide receiver 3, maybe a low-end wide receiver 2 for fantasy football if he gets a chance to play, if he's in the right offense, and if he looks serious about football. That's his ceiling, though, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't really think it's worth getting all that excited for. But, you know, we'll see which situation he ends up in. I think he's going to play.
Yeah, I kind of hope he does. I mean, he was a talent. I mean, we saw last year in the preseason, we saw him make a few moves. He had Brent Grimes looking silly. And then Brent Grimes turned out to be one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL last year. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's still something left there. It's just a matter of who's going to take a chance on him. Dan, have you given any thought where you think that Josh Gordon might fit in with an NFL offense right now?
Well, I think it's important to remember the fact this guy's still just going to be 26 years old. So
good point.
The talent is there. But I mean, granted, he hasn't been on the field since 2014. I mean, for me, I sort of had my fantasy funeral on him, a couple years ago. I'm sort of done investing in him. Now, that said, if he landed in the right spot, I mean, certainly he's going to show up in my rankings. He's certainly going to show up on the cheat sheet. But the guy, quite honestly, I'll likely avoid, because with this layoff, with the issues, just too much baggage for me at a position that, let's face it, it's as deep as it's ever been in fantasy football.
Well, it's true. Now, here, I'm going to give you guys a real quick, I want your, like, on the spot thoughts on this. Let's pretend that Josh Gordon, Jerry Jones decides, I'm going to take a chance on this guy.
Ooh, I like that.
If Josh Gordon lands in Dallas, where do you rank him among your wide receivers? What range would you put him?
I would definitely say that he'd still be more, given the layoff, given the situation. Plus, I still think Dallas is going to be a run-first football team. He's not going to be the first weapon there. So for myself, I would probably still have a tough time getting him into that wide receiver 3 range. I think he's somewhere between 30 and 40 in the ranks.
Exactly.
And probably a little bit more. A little bit more of an asset in a standard league than he would be in a PPR, I would guess.
Yeah, I would think he'd be a better MFL 10 asset, because he's going to have those games where he'll probably blow up, but I don't think he's going to be anywhere nearly as consistent as someone like Dez Bryant would be.
If we knew that Josh Gordon was going to play, you know, the league average 14 games for a wide receiver, you know, because the average is two injured games per season. And that's all spread out, of course. But if we knew Josh Gordon was going to play 14 games, I'd rank him somewhere 22 to 26, maybe. But because he has all that risk, I mean, who's to say he's just not going to get suspended again if he does sign with Dallas, right? So I have him in the 30 to 35 range right now if he was to make that move.
Yeah, I don't think that's bad. My question more is on where I value him in on Dynasty. I own him in a few Dynasty leagues. I don't know what to do with him. I'm just holding hope that he signs with someone. I could sell it basically, you know, on name value alone and just kind of be done with the issue. Another name that I really thought we were going to be moving on from, that it's kind of weird. I don't really know what the Panthers are doing here because, I mean, they were tight in cap space, but at the same time, with the NFL cap, the salary cap going up, they decided to extend Jonathan Stewart 1 year. I think a lot of people, myself included, were tying a running back to the Carolina Panthers. I was of the mindset that Leonard Fournette may be going there if he makes it past Jacksonville. I know there's a lot of people saying that, you know, the Panthers run a lot of shotgun and Leonard Fournette is not a shotgun running back, but I do believe they're looking for a change in Carolina, and that's why I thought Fournette would go there. With them extending Jonathan Stewart a year, Dan, what does this do for their outlook in the NFL draft? Do you think that they're still looking to draft a running back? Do you think this shows confidence in Stewart? Or do you think it was just something to create some cap room for this year?
I think it's a little of all of the above. I definitely think there's still a player for a running back early in this draft. Now, whether that's Fournette falling to them, you know, powering it up. But I mean, Jonathan Stewart, it still comes down to just the durability questions and him being able to play the amount of games. And I don't see a team being able to really focus their offense around him. But what's really the other part of this is the fact they still need to build up some other parts of this team. I mean, there are a lot of holes in Carolina. It seems a long time ago, but it was just two short seasons ago. They were playing for Vince Lombardi's trophy. But now you got Cam Newton dealing with this shoulder issue. He's going to miss much time at camp. There's not a ton of receivers there. Heck, they even lost Ted Ginn Jr. So a lot of needs to be addressed in the draft. So I wouldn't be shocked to see if they sort of pass on running back, take a guy in the later rounds. But I definitely think they're not sold long term on Jonathan Stewart. And I don't know how you could be, fellas.
I'm a believer in Jonathan Stewart. I mean, I know running backs age really quickly, so his career really could be over. But you look at his tape from 2 years ago. I think he was one of the best six or seven running backs in the league. Pro Football Focus agrees with me. I talked to Chris Harris last season, and you know he was really high on Jonathan Stewart because the tape speaks loudly. Jonathan Stewart has been a good running back in this league, and it wasn't the greatest situation for him, but I think he can probably still play if the Panthers decide to hang on to him for another year. So he's a guy that I wouldn't mind getting around picks 90 to 110 this season because I think he's going to get a fair amount of carries. He's going to get the goal line work, and I think Jonathan Stewart can still play in this league. With that being said, I don't think it's crazy to say that Carolina could still go get a running back in the first 40 picks of this draft, because look, for so long they had Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams, so why don't they just go get a Joe Mixon at 2.8 and have two solid running backs?
Well, that's the thing. I think that it's a smart idea to grab a running back. Meaford with Jonathan Stewart, I don't know if it necessarily comes down to his talent. I'm not an overbeliever in his talent. I think he's an above average NFL starting running back, but here's the issue. He can't stay healthy, and part of the it has translated to fantasy football, and the reason why I can't draft him as a top 24 running back, the guy has finished in his entire career. He's been playing in the league since 2008. He's finished as a top 24 running back just twice, and that was in standard leagues where he supposedly is worth more because in PPR, we know he doesn't catch passes. So for me, I'm not a huge Jonathan Stewart guy. I wasn't last year. I think he's boring. It does help if they don't draft a running back and they want to hold Cam Newton back. If they don't want Cam Newton to run the ball very much anymore, I understand the bump in his projection because he's going to see more goal line carries. But
the second running back is a necessity here because you're talking about a guy that hasn't played in 16 games since 2011. I mean, he's missed three games each of the last three seasons. He only played in 15 games in 2012 and 13. So, I mean, even if you like his talent, even if you think he's a fit in Carolina, I mean, just the whole idea of this guy being able to be out there every single Sunday. I mean, for the Panthers standpoint, they need to have some more depth. And I'm sorry, Cameron Artis Payne is not that guy.
You're right. You're exactly right.
No, I think they've admitted their mistake on that one. I don't want to talk about Cameron Artis Payne for too long. So let's just do what we were here to do, guys. We're going to go through. We're going to discuss the ECR. If you don't know what that means, it's the expert consensus ranking. So we gather up. I think we're over 100. 220 experts around all websites, and we take everyone's rankings, combine them in, and it creates an expert consensus ranking, the ECR. So we're going to go through every position, talk about some players that we believe that are overvalued, some that are undervalued right now, and then we'll debate amongst ourselves. So Dan, being our guest, I want to give you first crack at this. Let's start at quarterback. Who, give us a one quarterback that you love that is it's not showing an ECR, and one that you think that is being drafted higher than he should be.
Yeah, I'll start with the one I like a little bit more than the rest, and that's Kirk Cousins, fellas. I mean, here's a guy that, first of all, I think the fact he didn't go to San Francisco or Cleveland, I should say yet, I'm assuming he's going to stay in DC. I think that's a big win. And I love what they did with Terrell Pryor to make up for the loss of DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon in free agency. The fact of the matter is Jay Gruden is the coach here in Washington. You look at a guy, and I haven't watched Gruden in Cincinnati as the offensive coordinator. If you go back in 2012, Andy Dalton was the 12th ranked quarterback. In 2013, he was the third ranked quarterback in fantasy. In Gruden's first year in DC, 2014, they had to split the time with RG3 and Cousins, but Cousins last year was, the QB5 and QB9 in 2015. So essentially, for four of the last 5 years, a Jay Gruden quarterback's been a QB1. I've got Cousins at 7 in my rankings currently. I think he falls right out of that first tier or two, but, you know, I like him a lot more over some of the guys directly behind him. I think this offense is going to continue to pass the football. And as far as a player I'm a little down on, I've got Cam Newton currently, a guy we were just talking about there in Carolina. I've got him outside of QB1 range right now. And I mean, granted, I think the difference between 7 and 12 on this list is very minute. But I mean, given the issues with his shoulder surgery, we're going to see how much time he misses in camp. But more so the fact that Kelvin Benjamin is a guy that does not impress me very much. And Ted Ginn Jr. is gone. I mean, you can only go so long with just a tight end to throw to. The weapons there, if they draft Fournette, they're going to go more running style. And I don't think Cam Newton can continue to plow it in at the goal line as frequently as we're seeing. So I think the team's going to have to take a more cautious approach. Cam Newton's a guy I'll be taking a cautious approach on in 2017 fantasy drafts for sure.
It's crazy. You've got Cam Newton. Some experts have him all the way up at number 2. And some have him all the way down at 13. The guy that I'm really low on is Ben Roethlisberger in tags. I'm sure I'm stealing your guy because we agree on Big Ben. He's number 8 in ECR. Someone has him all the way down at number 18. I'm not sure if that's you, tags, but I'm pretty close there. I've got him at number 15. I'm just not a big believer in having him on your fantasy team. Sure, he's going to have, you know, 4 or 5 big games that make him look like a top 10 quarterback at the end of the season. But what it's going to come down to is he's going to single-handedly lose you 3 or 4 games during the season because he's so terrible a lot of the time. And it's usually in those away games. So you have an idea, but I just don't want him as my number one quarterback.
Hold on. So I'm going to chime in on both of your guys as quarterbacks higher than they should be. And honestly, so my article came out today, my rankings versus the ECR, and those are the two that I have drafted higher than they should be. So both of you are spot on. I'll start with Cam Newton. Cam Newton, Dan, if you remember when Cam Newton was concussed back in week 4, the Panthers said they needed to change the way they were doing things with Cam going forward. In the 11 games that followed, Newton ran the ball 61 times for 212 yards and 3 touchdowns. If you extrapolate that over a full 16-game season, that equals 308 yards and 4 touchdowns. To give you a
Blake Bortles territory.
Exactly. A comparison, actually Aaron Rodgers ran for 60 more yards and the same amount of touchdowns. We don't consider Aaron Rodgers to be the most, you know, he's not Tyrod Taylor. So Cam Newton, if we drag down his rushing totals to where Aaron Rodgers or Blake Bortles is, Cam Newton can't throw the ball very well. I think we've all learned that throughout his first 5 years, 6 years in the league. So for me, Cam Newton, I have him at number 11. I think he teeters on that QB1 level just because he will add some rushing. And as for Roethlisberger, I did a study on him. Over the last 3 years, he's averaged 270 yards, 1 touchdown, and 0.9 interceptions per game on the road, which amounts to 13.9 fantasy points. Essentially, he's unusable on the road. Over his last 86 games played, going back all the way to 2011, 32 of the 86 games he has scored fewer than 14 fantasy points.
Ben that's horrible.
Yeah. So for me, Bobby, I don't have an 18, but I have a number 13. I think he is the best QB2 that you can have in fantasy football. I think that you can tie him in with someone else, you know, maybe like a Carson Palmer or a Tyrod Taylor, who I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But Ben Roethlisberger, you can't rely on a week-to-week basis. And when you're spending a number eight quarterback pick like the ECR is on him, you typically don't draft a backup quarterback with that. So for me, I don't understand why Roethlisberger is up at number eight. I think there's been just two times in his entire career where he's finished top eight. I'm not seeing it. So I love both of your guys' picks as far as overvalued guys go. Bobby, who is your guy that you think he's lower than he should be?
I've got two of them. Kirk Cousins was already talked about. I've got him also up at number seven. And then Tyrod Taylor, who I know you're going to talk about tags. I've got him in my top 10 as well at number 10. So I'll just let you go on and talk about Tyrod Taylor because I know you're really into him.
Tyrod Taylor, I really don't understand it. In MFL 10s, he's going as the QB 18 right now, I was told. It's really nuts because if you go back, he finishes number eight last year, number 6 points per game in 2015. Guys, he finishes the number eight quarterback while missing Sammy Watkins for a large chunk of the year. And even when Sammy Watkins was on the field, we know he wasn't Sammy Watkins. So in essence, Tyrod Taylor's receiving core was Robert Woods, Marquise Goodwin, and Justin Hunter as his top three wide receivers. Yet he finishes the number eight fantasy quarterback. I see the Bills drafting a quarterback or a wide receiver in the first two rounds, which should help. Only help Tyrod Taylor. He's going to have a healthy Sammy Watkins back. Love Tyrod Taylor. One other name that I'm curious to hear if you guys agree with me, Dak Prescott. I think Dak Prescott is severely undervalued. Last year, even combining week 17, where he basically did not play, he finished as he averaged a top 12 quarterback performance in 69% of his games. That was tied with Aaron Rodgers. Wow. For the third highest mark in the NFL. So if we removed week 17, he actually had a better percentage of QB1 performances than Aaron Rodgers last year. But yet he's being drafted behind Ben Roethlisberger. I'm clueless.
I don't have Dak that high, but you know, I do think that he should be drafted above Ben Roethlisberger.
I've got Dak in my top 10 right now. And I do think it's going to be interesting as well to see how teams sort of respond to him coming into the second year. I mean, you know, the first half of this season in particularly, you know, first look, different type of team. I'm anxious to see what Dak can do during year two, but I am a believer, Tags.
Yeah, no, you know what's crazy is we saw it in the playoffs too, right? So Dan, I'm sure you remember when Odell Beckham and the Giants played against, it was against the Packers, and the Packers basically set up like punt coverage on Odell Beckham because the Giants didn't have a running game to compensate. And therefore Odell Beckham was seeing double coverage, like legitimate double coverage, which not many receivers see in the league despite perception. So Dak Prescott, he's not going to have that issue with Dez Bryant because Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield, it forces you to stack. You're going to have at least seven men in the box at all times, if not eight. So, you know, that's why against the Packers, we saw Dez Bryant go off because you just can't do the things that you would do against other teams against the Cowboys. Dak Prescott only threw the ball 459 times last year. That ranked 23rd in the league, yet he finished as the number six quarterback, and he didn't even show off his legs as much as I think he could have. So I think we're all believers in Dak. I think that we can go on to the next position.
Yeah, let's go to running back, and I'll start us off here. Robert Kelly, I think, is way too low. I'm looking at all the experts and where they have him ranked. I'm the highest expert on Robert Kelly, and it's really not even close. I've got him at number 10, but I watched this guy run, and I know it's not certain that he's going to be the running back in Washington, but as long as he is at the lead of that depth chart, he just runs so hard. He bounces off tackles. He makes people miss. I think Robert Kelly is going to be a very good, durable starting running back that can be used in all three downs in this league. So I'm a big believer in Robert Kelly. Where do you guys fall on him?
I'm not feeling it with Robert Kelly. I mean, right now I've got him at 20. I don't know. You think he's a three down back? I just don't think he's that versatile. I think by the time the draft gets over, we're going to be dropping him down a little bit further here. I don't know. He's okay. I mean, I like the fact that you can go off of him right now because who else do they have? But at the end of the day, that's about the only pros I've got to the guy's game. I mean, I think that, he could still be touchdown relative, even if they get another young running back into the mix there. But ultimately not feeling Kelly as much as you. I got him some 10 spots lower.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dan. I'm not. Today's NFL, you have to be an elite talent if you can't catch passes out of the backfield. And I don't think Rob Kelly is an elite talent. I think he's solid. I think he's a solid timeshare back. And because of that, I can't rank him inside the top eight, inside the top 18. I think I have him at number 18 right now. So that's about where I feel comfortable right now. And I do think they draft a running back. And I think it should be somewhat of a timeshare, because when he's in the offense, like when he's on the field, it's one dimensional. You know, they're not passing the ball to him, because if you watch the games last year, I watched him and he cannot catch a pass. It's not like Leonard Fournette, where sometimes he'll catch a ball, sometimes he'll drop it. No, he cannot catch a pass. And that's obviously an issue in today's NFL.
12 receptions and 18 targets is really not bad for a running back. But yeah, you're right. They didn't pass him the ball very much.
Yeah, no, I just don't think they believe in him there, yeah.
Going back to his college days, and I'm going off my memory here, but I believe he played his entire collegiate career without a catch. I'll have to go back and check that. But
oh.
I'll have to go back and check that, but I'm pretty sure I remember that stat from last summer, so.
I've got his college stats pulled up, and he had 86 receptions in 4 years.
Okay. I'm missing it, though. I'm glad you fact-checked me. That's fake news.
Well, I was going to say, I think Derrick Henry was a guy that didn't catch very many passes in college, if I'm not mistaken. You may have been thinking of Derrick Henry, but I think he's more of a special talent than Robert Kelly is, though.
You're right. Yeah, Derrick Henry is really, really good. I mean, if he gets the job, he could be a first-round pick next year.
Yeah, this year is actually one of the running backs that I have higher than he should be. In my article that'll be out tomorrow is DeMarco Murray. We saw it as the season went on. I don't know. He can't really give us any more warning signs than he's already given us, right? Like, you know, week 11 on, he went from averaging 4.9 yards a carry all the way down to 3.5. He wasn't scoring touchdowns because they were giving Derrick Henry the goal line touches, because Derrick Henry was converting like a madman. DeMarco Murray, the stats I have right here, in the first 10 games of the year, 21.8 PPR points per game. Weeks 11 through 17, just 12.6. So I think we've already seen the decline, guys. Like, we were seeing a bunch of veteran running backs hit the open market, signing a one-year deal, because teams are moving on. You know, DeMarco Murray's a guy that's racked up over 1,300 touches over the last 4 years. His age is going to catch up with him. Derrick Henry's a monster, but I don't think he's going to become irrelevant, but I do not have him ranked as an RB1.
Yeah, a guy that I'm down on, just transitioning a little bit more so than most, and one of my local guys here, Jeremy Hill of the Bengals, 21 right now in the expert consensus ranking. I got him at 29, and there's a lot of factors here. I can tell you, some of my friends that follow the team on a daily basis, they've all been unison to me, and the fact that the Bengals are looking to shake things up in the backfield this year. Hopefully Giovanni Bernard gets more in play. I would not be surprised to see them add some depth in the draft. I mean, 29 touchdowns over the last 3 years is hard to ignore in Hill's case, especially in fantasy where touchdowns do pay the bills. But I will say, you know, you add to the fact they lost Kevin Zeitler, Andrew Whitworth, the Bengals offensive line suddenly goes from one of the best units in the league to average, if not below average. And I think it's going to be a rough year for this offense. And Hill is not a guy that I want to stick in there. Yeah, he might get some touchdowns here and there and have some big weeks. More of a, not a guy you want to count on in your lineup, though, because you just don't know when it's going to come.
I'm with you on Hill.
Yeah. 100%. I literally could not say anything on top of that. Bobby, you might have more, but I think Dan said it perfectly.
There's nothing that I was going to add. It was right on the money. And coming from someone out of Cincinnati, I would expect that to be right in line. My guy that I think is too high right now is Latavius Murray. First of all, he's not very good. Second of all, he's behind an horrible offensive line, and their quarterback is what? Sam Bradford, maybe Teddy Bridgewater. That situation does not excite me very much. 19 is way too high. Somebody has him all the way down at 42. I think that's a little bit too low, but I'm not drafting my top 25.
Yeah, I'm low on Murray. I actually have him right at number 25, and I wouldn't be shocked if I ended up moving him down. I think McKinnon's a better talent than him. I'd rather wait multiple rounds and take McKinnon.
Yes, I got him at 25 too, and definitely in a PPR, McKinnon's my guy. Murray, I mean, he could still finish as a low end RB2 in standard leagues, but I mean, Minnesota's just been brutal against the run, yards after contact. I mean, the line just took a step back last season, so Lat Murray not exciting me either, fellas.
No, definitely not. My guy that I think is being looked at lower than he should be is Carlos Hyde. I don't think enough people are catching on to what's going on in San Francisco. I think the arrival of Kyle Shanahan only improves Carlos Hyde's outlook. We saw the Falcons running backs this year. They combined for over 2,600 total yards, 25 touchdowns. He's already come in and said that Carlos Hyde can catch the ball a lot better than you think he can. And, you know, last year that team was a mess. I think we can all agree on that. And despite the fact that Carlos Hyde is looked at as a non-pass catching back, he finished number 11 in PPR points per game. He was number 9 points per game in standard format. So for me, the talent has always been there. The injuries are definitely a concern. But if you tell me that Carlos Hyde's healthy for 16 games, I have him ranked as my number 6 running back right now. And I know that a lot of people may be like, wow, that's really high. But I believe that much in this kid. I think he's elusive. I think that they have something coming together in San Francisco. They're going to start to get some stability. And I would take him in front of guys like Jay Ajayi.
Mike, that is really high, man. I think you're on to something there. I always thought Carlos Hyde having Chip Kelly there would be able to do something. But yeah, he was all right. He was all right. And I'm just not so sure that Kyle Shanahan's better for a fantasy running back than Chip Kelly was, because Chip Kelly got them so many plays, but they always played down from behind. And I think San Francisco is going to be really bad again this year. So, if he is catching balls out of the backfield, it will be better, but I don't think it'll be that much better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely understand the concern about San Francisco being a bad team and all that, but Chip Kelly, I was expecting them to run a lot of plays last year, but they really weren't among the league leaders. It was because teams were just basically jumping out in front of a lead and playing keep away from them. I think they can only get better. I think getting Navarro Bowman back makes a huge difference. You really saw that team go downhill from a defensive standpoint when he went down. That's when basically they started allowing that string of, 120 rushing yard running backs back to back to back to back. But I love Hyde. I don't know where you stand on him, Dan.
I mean, I've been enamored with Hyde since his days as a Buckeye there at Ohio State. And I'm with you. I think Shanahan's going to give him a big boost. My only concern is durability. I mean, it's something that was a concern when he was a Buckeye, and it certainly carried into the NFL. I mean, three games this year. He only played 7 games in 2015. So if he can hold up and carry that load, I think he's going to be something special. And I'm with you. I think he's a top 10 running back that many are overlooking right now.
There we go.
Guys, let's move on over to wide receiver tags. I want to know who you're going with here for most undervalued and overvalued.
Undervalued right now, I'm going to go with Pierre Garçon, just because there's such a big gap in it. His ECR right now is number 52, which is maddening to me. Like, I really just don't understand it. My ranking on him is number 31. And honestly, I have him as a low-end wide receiver 3, but I think that that's at minimum what he should be in this offense. You know, they're paying him over $15 million in the first year of his contract. The last time that he played with Shanahan in his offense, he garnered 182 targets, is the league leader in targets that year, 182. My stat that I have for you is that 110 targets, right? 110 targets. If you see that many targets, you're essentially a lock. I think it was 92%. A lock for top 36 wide receiver numbers. When you distribute the targets,
that's a good one.
Yeah, when you distribute the targets around San Francisco and you look at Pierre Garçon as the number one possession style receiver, it's hard not to say that. And we've seen over the last couple of years, Brian Hoyer holding up DeAndre Hopkins, holding up Cameron Meredith when he was starting. So for me, Pierre Garçon, number 52 is ludicrous. Like, you could argue that I'm a little too high at 31, but there's no way you can convince me that he's lower than 40.
Is this you coming out as a San Francisco 49ers fan? You're talking about Bowman, Carlos Hyde,
Garçon. I'm sensing a 49ers fan on the.
I think that maybe the Bears just got so bad that he had to turn to a team that was better, so he's going with the 49ers.
Honestly, no, it's funny. When I was putting together these articles and kind of going through it, I'm like, oh my God, this is happening again, isn't it? Because last year, I was high on Torrey Smith, and we all know how that ended up. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't blame you. I think the Garçon one is accurate. I don't have him as high as 31, but I've got him all the way up at 40. I think 49 is pretty crazy.
I've got him at 39, I'm up there with you. And he'll be rising in PPR leagues for the reasons you indicated. That reunion with Shanahan is magic. Question, I guess, is who's going to be throwing into football?
Yeah.
It's Hoyer right now. I think it's got to be.
Yeah,
I think they did a bridge deal. Honestly, I think the 49ers should be looking at Trubisky. I think that they can start Hoyer, have Trubisky waiting in the wings, give him a year on the bench. Like, I'm tired. I'm going to go on a little rant here. I am tired of NFL teams throwing rookies into the fire. Jared Goff might be ruined just because of what they did.
He's ruined.
They felt the need to put him in like immediately. Carson Wentz, we saw him struggle as the year went on. I prefer quarterbacks to sit behind like Garoppolo, like Aaron Rodgers. I prefer the quarterbacks to take some time back, learn the game, the speed of the NFL, practice with the team, and then go eased into the action. I don't like quarterbacks being thrown in. And that for that reason, I think Hoyer was a good signing. If they don't draft a quarterback high, it's because they're waiting on Kirk Cousins next year.
And you get the luxury of waiting on developing a quarterback if you're a new hire like Mike Shanahan. But if you're a coach on the hot seat, you don't have that luxury.
That's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, I think Hoyer's better to win this season than Trubisky as well. I mean, Hoyer's been a pretty good quarterback in the NFL. And these rookies, they come in and they just struggle unless they're one of these running quarterbacks, at which point their career's not very long. So you've got to get the best out of them. Now, guys, we've been agreeing a little bit too much. So I'm going to toss out four names here. And I want you guys to pick someone to disagree with me on so that we can have some back and forth here. These are the four guys I think are rated too low. DeAndre Hopkins at number 11. It's just absurd to me. I've got him up at number 6. Allen Robinson at number 17. Again, too low. I've got him up in my top 10. Kevin White at 48. You guys know I love me some Kevin White. With Alshon gone, he's the number one guy there. They're going to be playing from behind, and Kevin White is a freak athlete. He's one of the best wide receiver athletes in the NFL, so I love him as well. And then Kenny Britt at 39, I think, is just a little bit too low because he's the only guy there in Cleveland. We saw what did. Again, I can't remember because Terrell Pryor did last year because, you know, he was so bad, but he was the feature guy. And Kenny Britt's better than Terrell Pryor, so I think he'll be a top 35 guy as well. So where do you guys disagree here?
Well, I mean, I'm not too far off on any of the guys you said. I mean, I definitely don't have Hopkins at number 6. I think that's a little aggressive. I mean, the talent's there, but you've got some other pieces. Once again,
that's all based on Tony Romo going there. I think it's going to happen.
Okay. If Romo goes there, yeah, it bumps him.
If Romo goes there, and let's add another if. If Romo doesn't get broke within like 3 games. Because, I mean, I'm all about Tony Romo, but let's face it, the guy's made out of glass. Kevin White, I don't really disagree with you too much there. I really like Kevin White. I mean, any guy that's 6'3 or taller and runs a 4'3, 5'40 is enough for me to hold out there. But I don't know about the Kenny Britt. I mean, that's the right spot for him. But the statement you made about Terrell Pryor not being that good, I'm not sold on that. I think Terrell Pryor had an outstanding season last year, and most of it was his playmaking ability. In fact, I think what he did, going from quarterback to not playing that position to emerging at the level he did, making the plays in the situations, I'm looking forward to Terrell Pryor in D.C. So if I'm going to disagree with
you, anything, can have him. I'm not drafting him. You can have him.
He's a wide receiver too next year.
I would respectfully disagree on that. I have my reasoning on that, but I'm going to jump on Bobby for the Kenny Britt thing because I'm not going to say he's not going to move up because I haven't done my initial set of projections. This is more like what I feel like when I look at things on the scope. And I think Kenny Britt, I have him outside my top 50. I say that because I think Corey Coleman takes a step forward. I think he's their number one wide receiver this year. I think Kenny Britt, what we saw in 2016 is a mirage. You know, this was his first year in the NFL where he totaled 1,000 yards. The guy can't stay healthy. He has no chemistry. We don't know who's going to be throwing the quarterback. I'm willing to guess that it's Cody Kessler at this point. I think that they're going to try and see what they have in the kid. Corey Coleman and him have established some rapport. Kenny Britt, again, I think it had to do a lot with targets and the fact that there was nobody else there to compete with the Rams. Kenny Britt, I'm not a believer. I'm not going to go here and say that he's a much worse talent than Terrell Pryor. I don't believe that. I think Kenny Britt may be better. So you could throw out that comparison, but my take, they're not throwing the ball nearly as much this year. I think their defense will improve. I think their offensive line has improved enough to the point where they're going to run the ball a ton. And I believe Corey Coleman is emerging, and I cannot see 2 top 40 wide receivers coming out of Cleveland. So for me, Kenny Britt is the odd man out.
I'll say this. You sold me on Corey Coleman. Kind of forgot about him when I was throwing out that. I'm trying to get some argument going here. So I'm glad I forgot about Corey Coleman. But you're right about that. You're also right that Kenny Britt had nobody competing with him in Los Angeles. That was a horrible situation. Yeah. So transfer him over to Cleveland and also having no one to compete with except for Corey Coleman, that works too. But I'll tell you what. Cody Kessler is 80 times better than the quarterback situation they had there in Los Angeles. So I think he gets a little bit of a boost there, but I'm going to back off my statement a little bit. I'm not going to drop him down to 50, but I don't know. Maybe he's about right at 39.
Hold on a second. I want someone tell me I'm wrong. Someone argue with me. Tell me that I'm wrong. I have Julian Edelman ranked as my number 37 wide receiver.
Hold on a second. Let me find out. He's at 21 right yep. now, so yep. you are the single lowest expert on him. So I think it's safe to say that, yeah, I disagree with you. With that being said, I don't have him at 21. I think that's wild. What's going on there? That's going to drop here in the preseason. It's got to. They have so many weapons.
So I've looked into this. Edelman, over the last 4 years, he has averaged a ridiculous 9.33 targets per game. Okay? And it was almost 10 in 2016. It was 9.94 per game. Despite that many targets per game, Edelman has never finished better than the number 18 wide receiver in standard leagues. And that's what the primary ECR is. I think it's... Oh, it's backed up to 21 now. He's ranked at 21. Like, I think people forgot that over the last couple of years, they missed Rob Gronkowski during a lot of that time. They didn't have Malcolm Mitchell. They didn't have Chris Hogan. They didn't have Brandon Cooks, James White, Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead. They traded for Dwayne Allen. There are so many people here. And now, okay, let's just say that him and Cooks are going to split things up. Maybe I'm too high on Cooks. I don't think so, because the Patriots and Tom Brady have targeted wide receivers just 279 times in 2016, 291 times in 2015, 306 in 2014. And again, that's keeping in mind that Rob Gronkowski has missed a lot of time during that. Where are we getting over 120 targets for Julian Edelman? He hasn't been able to do anything with 9.3 targets per game. I have no idea in standard ranking how we could put him inside the top 30.
Well, in general, in New England, I mean, you figure, what are there, about 35 targets to go around per game? I mean, yeah. Seriously. So yeah. even Cooks, and I'm with you on Edelman in a standard league, is always dropping down. Now in PPR leagues, I think he's a wide receiver too. I can live with, but even Brandon Cooks, I mean, I don't think he's a wide receiver. I think he actually took a step back with this trade. I still like Cooks. I'm not saying that, but going back to the 35 targets a game here, you're looking, okay, let's say Cooks gets 20% of that, which I think is a big share. I mean, what is that? Seven targets a game. I mean, I don't know. I think Cooks, what scares me, you know, transitioning to a guy I think slightly overvalued. I got him 9 spots lower. I got him right at 24. And it's a lot of the same things about the mouse to feed. But the other stat on Cooks, this guy's never played in a football game with the temperature below 53 degrees. And I mean, you're going from the dome. You're going from playing indoors against the NFC South, nonetheless, which is like probably one of the easiest divisions to match up against it for the last couple of years. To where now you're going in here, I've got Cooks a little bit down on my list. And conversely, on the other side of that trade and the winner of the trade is I bumped Willie Snead up in my last update of the rankings there, Fantasy Pros, fellas. I mean, I still think he's more wide receiver 3 range, but he had some stretches last year, 140 catches now over the past 2 seasons, 142 to be exact. So I think he's a big winner. I've got him at 33 in my rank, Snead, and I dropped Cooks down to 24.
I like where your head's at on Snead. Snead, yeah, that too. But Brandon Cooks. So me, Brandon Cooks, I have him, I think, at number 16 right now. And I honestly think that he's probably going to finish as like a top 14, top 12 guy. But I wouldn't draft him there because he's going to be extremely maddening. You said about the temperatures. He's also not played very well outside compared to indoors. He's always been an indoor guy. That could have something to do with Drew Brees excelling a little bit more at home than he does on the road. But Drew Brees was still pretty dang good on the road. I just looked it up just to see if I was crazy about this. So Edelman, even without Cooks there last year, when he saw that basically 10 targets per game, he finishes the number 17 wide receiver on PPR. So for me, like I said, in standard leagues, he's outside the top 30 for me, easy. But in PPR, I think you could make a point to say, okay, maybe he slips inside the top 30. But again, with his ECR,
he'll still be overdrafted. He'll be overdrafted.
Yeah. Exactly. With his ECR where it is, it's nuts. I have no idea. I don't want any part of the Patriots outside of Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski.
I don't want any part of Amari Cooper. And I know that's going to set you off tag, so have at it, man. He's he is very, very talented, but they just don't pass him the ball. I don't know why that's going to change this season. I mean, why do you think it's going to change? He's been healthy. That hasn't been the problem. They just like throwing the ball to Crabtree more.
Well, no. No. So in the red zone, they've thrown to Michael Crabtree. And I think that has to do with a veteran presence. I don't know what it is about Crabtree in the red zone, but he's done pretty well. And that's where he's made up the ground. I think Amari Cooper, you saw him get targeted more this past season. I think you see him grow in so many different ways. And the red zone is where the one area where he's been lacking. It's either he's going to take a step forward in his year three, which is, you know, typically when wide receivers have the grasp, they know what's going on, they move around pretty well. I think I brought this up on another podcast. It's like Michael Crabtree outscored, like, I think Amari Cooper only had like 11 fantasy points inside the red zone in 2016, which was just a crazy stat. He may be the next Andre Johnson, where he just never gets to 10 touchdowns. That may actually happen with him, but Amari Cooper, you're going to get 80 to 90 catches. You're going to have 11 to 1200 yards, and you're probably going to have 6 touchdowns, which puts him right there in wide receiver one territory. I think he may not be the highest upside wide receiver. He may not give you that, you know, Odell Beckham ceiling, but I think that he's one of the safest wide receiver ones you can draft.
You know, Amari Cooper is still just 22 years old.
He's
wow.
So good. He's so
he
good.
He could be a lot better. But with that being said, I mean, 132 targets for him last season, 145 for Crabtree. The season before, 146 to 130. That's one target per game more both of the past two seasons. Crabtree's really not that old either. I mean, he's still just 29 years old. So I think he continues to get his fair share. And like I said, like you said, I think that caps Cooper's ceiling. He is probably pretty safe, but, you know, I really like to go get upside with these wide receivers. So the guys I have ahead of him, I've got DeAndre Hopkins ahead of him. I've got Sammy Watkins ahead of him, who I think has an extremely high upside. I've even got Doug Baldwin ahead of him. So, I'm not a big fan of Cooper. You all know that. So
where are you at? Where are you at on him, Dan? Is Bobby nuts or am I nuts?
I think he's a low end wide receiver one. I'm with more towards your side, Mike. I wish the touchdowns would be there, but as long as Crabtree is in there and the others, and plus, I mean, once again, you look at that division, there's matchups and tough defenses. The schedule's going to be a little tougher, and I'm not a big schedule analysis guy when I'm doing these ranks, but I think Cooper's a guy that just outside of the top 10, but fringe wide receiver one on my board.
Yeah. So, Bobby, just an FYI here. Kelvin Benjamin averaged more standard and PPR points per target than your boy Michael Crabtree.
Oh, I'm not that excited about Michael Crabtree. I'm just saying he's going to keep Cooper from being all that great.
Don't you back off on your statement, Bobby. We're going to have a bet. We're going to make a bet on the podcast before the season, something in regards to Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. I have Crabtree. I know I'm lower on Crabtree than most because I like Cooper so that much. I have Crabtree at 22. I have Cooper at 11.
I mean, I'm really not that much lower on Cooper. I've got him at 15. I've got Crabtree at 18. So it's really not that extreme. It's just funny to see you get worked up over Cooper, and I won't be drafting him. So
yeah, no, I feel you. I hear you.
All right, let's move on over to tight end, and we'll close out this show. Tight end, there's just one guy that I'm excited about. I'm not even really considering anyone else for tight end. I'm drafting Hunter Henry in every single league, no matter what. Where do you guys stand on Henry?
You're wrong. I'm going to say you're wrong. I'm gonna let Dan talk it out first.
I'm wrong because you're going to draft him. You're going to reach ahead of me. Is that what you're saying?
Dan, could you please tell him he's wrong on Hunter Henry, please?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know how he's saying that's how I don't know. How, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid on Henry, too, but I don't know.
Yeah, baby.
I don't know if I'm gonna end up with him in every single draft, but I mean, you know, speed, route running, athleticism, hands. I mean, this guy.
Superstar.
I mean, he has displayed it all. I mean, Antonio Gates, the old man, if he would just step aside, I'd be a little more excited here. But those two combined to score 15 times last year. I mean, that 4-week stretch Henry had early part of the season where 18 catches, 290 yards, 3 touchdowns. I think we got a taste of it there, but at the end of the day, I mean, I still look at him as a low end tight end one right now. So to say I'm going to end up with him in every draft, I'm probably not because, you know, there's other guys at the position. I obviously think Gronk's still up there, but Kelce, Olsen, Walker, Eifert. I like Ertz probably just as much as I like Hunter Henry, but, you know, either of those guys are both sort of on that back end of the top 10 for me.
I'm going to start, Bobby, by saying I like Hunter Henry. I like him in dynasty leagues. I think he's a fantastic player. I think I'd probably consider as a top 6 tight end in dynasty, but here's my issue. Okay, last year he finished as the number 11 tight end. He was only the second player in the last 5 years to finish as a top 12 tight end without seeing at least 70 targets. Do you know how many targets he saw? 53. Okay, that was with Keenan Allen.
That's pretty low.
That was with.
But that also says he's really good.
He was very efficient. Touchdowns. The only other player that did that in the last 5 years was Julius Thomas with Peyton Manning when he caught 12 touchdowns on 62 targets. Again, yeah. I like Henry, but my issue here is that with a healthy Keenan Allen, a healthy Travis Benjamin that they signed via free agency, Gates missed 2 games last year. And despite all that stuff happening, Henry only saw 53 targets. So for me, I think that his future is great in this league. My issue with the Chargers in general right now is that there's only so many targets to go around. And it's hard for me to account Henry for anything more than 60, 70 targets. And if history has shown us anything, we cannot project someone as a top 12 tight end without seeing at least 70 targets. So for me, Henry, I have him at 13, and I thought that was actually kind of high. But the one player I'd take over him, and I want you guys to tell me, what do you guys think? Jack Doyle.
Heck yeah.
I like Jack Doyle a lot. I'm not going to argue with you except that you put him over Henry, but I like Jack Doyle quite a bit. It's clear that the Colts really like him as well. I mean, they got rid of their other tight end, so it's Doyle territory now.
Yeah, I think Doyle is a guy that will probably be drafted accordingly by the time that we get to August. You know, people saw what he did last year. And, you know, going back to Hunter Henry and a final thought there. I mean, yeah, he finished as the tight end 12 last season. And I think people see that and get all excited. But you have to remember that last year was such a down year at the position.
Yep.
I mean, only 188 TD passes were caught by tight ends last year. That was the fewest since 2008. So, the fact that he finishes tight end 12 because of the touchdowns that he did have in his limited opportunities. But, you know, I do have Henry slightly over Doyle. I'd be happy. I don't end up with Gronk in many places. So I'm usually the guy waiting for the last tight end, you know, the 10th, 11th, 12th tight end off the board. So those are going to be some names. I think Henry will be a much higher draft pick. What do you guys think will go off the board around tight end 6, 5, 6, 7 by the time we actually get to the August?
Well, in my league's like number 2. I'm just kidding. No.
No.
I think he'll probably go off the board around I can't really see him being drafted above Ertz. I can see him being drafted above Ebron, so number 9 is probably about right. Maybe in some leagues number 7 or number 8, but I think he'll settle in there right around pick 100.
If someone wants to bet me on Jack Doyle versus Hunter Henry, I'm totally about that life. So, hit me up on Twitter. Tell me
you're moving to Chicago. I will bet you Lou Malnati's pizza.
Done.
Ooh,
that's a deal
on Hunter Henry.
That's a deal.
So I mean, obviously, this is pending.
Like, why did you have to say Lou Malnati's?
Because it's the best, man. It's the best.
Giordano's is really good.
Yeah, they're both delicious.
Yes.
So this is obviously pending injury. I mean, if Jack Doyle gets hurt or whatever, like I've got to let you out easy.
Jack Doyle might get hurt cutting his grass.
If Andrew Luck gets hurt behind that swag offensive line.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah. If Antonio Gates had retired, I would say, yeah, Hunter Henry belongs in the top 8 discussion. But the fact that Gates is still there, Keenan Allen come back, I just think that there's only so many targets. Melvin Gordon, obviously, they want him to run the ball. The offensive line, they didn't improve. They actually lost a couple players off their offensive line. So I'm really curious. That's one of the downsides of this generation is that we've never seen Phillip Rivers behind a good offensive line. And I would have loved to have seen that because he's put up solid numbers despite this bad offensive line. And I've always wanted to see him play behind a line. You know, someone like Tom Brady will sit back there, have time to pass. Rivers never has that.
Rivers is a very good NFL quarterback. It's a shame that his career's kind of been wasted.
Yes.
He could have been a superstar. I really do think that.
Agreed.
Now, let's see. Dan, do you have one final tight end for us before we end the show?
I mean, nothing exciting. I do think Julius Thomas is a guy that, still don't like him. I still don't like him as a tight end 1, but his expert consensus ranking at 22, I think that's a little low. So I got him and Austin Hooper. You talk about another second year tight end. I got him up at 19.
So efficient.
Yeah. I got him in my top 20 there. So two guys that aren't in the top 20 that, you know, are decent backups, I think. Thomas reigniting with Gase is enough for me to at least take a look if he can stay healthy. But they're guys. I don't carry two tight ends on many of my fantasy teams, so probably not looking.
Do you guys prefer a two tight end league or a one tight end league?
One
for sure.
I like two. I don't know. It's just the deeper you get. I want like 12 guys starting in my fantasy games because the deeper you get, the more fun it is. Like the more skill you can show.
Oh yeah,
you know?
100%. Yeah, but I mean, like there's guys like
there's no skill picking like Dennis Pitta versus Jesse James. I mean,
it's so true.
Okay, yeah. You're right.
We're gonna end the show talking about Dennis Pitta versus Jesse James. one name I would take over Julius Thomas that I think is really undervalued: Vance McDonald. I am a number too. 15.
Another 49er.
Oh my God! I didn't even realize it.
That's hilarious.
I think it's because people 15s. Oh God! I'm gonna log off now.
All right, guys. Well, that's all we have for you on the show today, Mike. Great show, Dan. Thank you for coming on. Great stuff as always, and looking forward to next time.
I always appreciate it, fellas.
Yeah, it was a blast, Dan. Like, next time you come on, we'll get more ammunition to team up on Bobby like we did. Bobby, stop talking about Amari Cooper.
You know, the really great thing is that I get the final word here. So I'm going to let you guys know that next week we have a show. We're going to be doing Dynasty ECR. It's going to be a fun show. And we'll be talking a lot about Hunter Henry, the best tight end in football. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.